VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I am Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And if Adam sounds a little remote, it's because Adam is a little remote today. He's at a soccer tournament, being a soccer dad down in Melbourne. But as we've all discovered over the years, the technology is pretty darn good, so you'll hardly notice. I, on the other hand, fought the little raindrops all the way out here just so I could be here in the studio talking to everybody, as always. And we'd like to thank everybody for coming back, if you're a regular, or for being here if you've just heard about us or just happened to be driving by with your radio on. That's just fine with us. No problem. I hope everybody can stick around for the whole hour, and I promise you, you'll learn some things. Got a variety of interesting topics today, as usual, but maybe more interesting in some respects. The market being one of them, of course. It was a wild and woolly week. Our word for the week last week was chaos. I dubbed this one chaos part two. It's chaos with a little practice, in other words. But it was It was kooky. And you're all being lied to, by the way, so listen to what we say over the next couple segments of this show, and you're going to find out a lot of things you won't hear in the media, and I promise you that one. And then at the bottom, we will have a trivia question at the end of the first segment. And at the bottom of the hour, I want to talk to people who were born in 1950 and 51. That doesn't mean other people shouldn't listen, because you will be all impacted by it, but I want to pick on those people, I being one of them, of course. Anyway, back to the fun and games that we called the week in the market. Take it away.
Yeah, my word for this week was, whew, thank gosh, we really dodged a bullet. It was a really, really wild week. We saw the inversion of the two-month, 10-year yield curve really sent equities into a tailspin on Wednesday. And it just flashed briefly Wednesday morning. And I'll get a little more into detail about what that is in a bit, but it's not a good thing. But it caused the Dow to lose over 800 points, which was kind of the low light of a really volatile week of trading that saw 300-point moves on the Dow, I think 4 out of the 5 days. So just a crazy week. And at the end of the day, the dust had settled. The Dow lost about 1.5%. And the other two indexes fared even better, with the S&P off just under 1% and the NASDAQ off just 0.8%. So it certainly felt a lot worse than that. And it could have been a lot worse had we not seen a little bit of a rally going into the weekend, which was good to see. I think calmer heads prevailed. And there's so much about the yield curve and just so much going on right now with the trade wars and the Hong Kong situation. It really could have turned ugly, and it didn't. So I think that's a pretty good sign. So as I mentioned earlier, the yield curve flashed a pretty major warning signal on Wednesday morning. And what happened was that the two-month Treasury rate was higher than the 10-year Treasury rate. Well, that's backwards, basically. You should always get paid more to hold paper for longer. But in a unusual situation like this, you would actually get paid less on a 10-year note than you would on a two-month note. That doesn't make any sense. Historically, this same phenomenon has happened prior to the last 7 recessions, and although the average time between this event and an actual recession is somewhere in the range of 22 months. So it's not like it says, oh, there's a recession starting tomorrow. It's saying that if things continue on this path, the economy will see a recession somewhere in the future. So why did it happen? The short answer is that investors are buying up bonds like crazy this week, which caused bond prices to rise and yields to sink. There are many reasons for this behavior, a lot of which we think are overblown, but the trade war is definitely the primary reason. Global economic data definitely played a part in it this week. It came in below expectations in two key areas, and all of that is pretty heavily linked. Investors seem to have lost all their appetite for risk in the past few weeks, which is why I'm kind of looking at global equities and thinking this might be a decent time to start thinking about a buying opportunity. Almost every major global index is trading at least one standard deviation below its 50-day moving average, meaning that they're all oversold. Hong Kong equities are some of the worst, fueled by the protest against the Chinese government, and they're trading near a 52-week low. The German DAX also plummeted this week below its 200-day moving average on news that their economy shrank last quarter. Their economy has kind of been the shining star of Europe for some time, and so this is not a good sign for Europe. The Argentinian market dropped 37% in one day this week due to their presidential election. This was the second worst day in any market ever. China saw their retail sales numbers, which had inexplicably surged on auto sales last month, drop like a rock this month to show a negative rate. Industrial production in China also fell. The worst hit was to foreign-owned enterprises. Now, we know why all that's going on in China, but the Germany thing is a little bit more concerning. So ironically, bullish sentiment rose slightly this week, and bearish sentiment dropped. Surprising considering the extreme volatility that we saw. However, both sentiment levels are more than a standard deviation away from their historic averages, so we're still seeing the majority of people are bearish on this economy and this market. There was a ton of U.S. data released this week, too, with 18 of the 29 releases beating expectations. Small business optimism started off the week with a beat, then mortgage applications came in at a 21.7% uptick, which was higher than last month, which was also up, but only 5.3%. And then retail sales once again crushed expectations, coming in at 0.7% versus an expected 0.3%. Walmart backed us up with a strong earnings report late in the week as well. Online retails are growing at about a 20% clip right now, so that's definitely an area to watch. The retail story has changed so much in the past year, 2 years, 3 years. Everything is going online. So despite all the doom and gloom in the media, the economic data is actually improving in the U.S. right now. Very surprising.
Well, you are being lied to every day by the media. Now, should I surprise you? Because anybody who is surprised to hear that has not been paying attention for some time. So let's talk about a fancy word called personification. Personification means you attribute people-type attributes to an inanimate object. What is happening now with the yield curve, which is an inanimate object? Yes, it moves, but it doesn't move itself. We move it. What has happened is that the press has been bombarding us with a virtual guarantee that the inverted yield curve is causing a recession to come. It can't. There's only one thing that can cause a recession to come, and that's human behavior. And when human behavior finally takes its toll on the economy, yes, there will eventually be a recession. But it will not be because the yield curve caused it. The yield curve might or might not predict it. And just to back me up, you ready for this one, Adam?
Yep.
My guru of the week, who backs up my philosophy 100%, is somebody named Janet Yellen.
Okay.
How about that?
Janet, I did not expect that.
Yeah, neither did I. Janet Yellen was at a conference in, first off, Hong Kong, which is probably not the first place I'd like to have been the last week or so. But
I hope she was able to fly out.
No kidding. Well, she made some very interesting comments from Hong Kong on the recession and so on, which I'll give you right after the break. I will introduce the trivia, but I don't have time. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we got a little more to wrap up here, but first I want to introduce our trivia question for the week, brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Adam mentioned earlier in the program that the Argentinian stock market had taken a bloodbath on Monday this past week, and it was actually the second worst one-day drop in the history of world stock markets. What country incurred the worst single one-day drop in world history? All you need is the country. So we'll make that pretty easy for those of you who are good researchers. And then I'll give you a little background on that one, too. But back to the market, some things we wanted to wrap up. I said, for those of you who know, which is most of you, I think Janet Yellen was the former chairman of the Federal Reserve. And I've never been a fan of Janet Yellen. I've never been a fan of the Federal Reserve. And I've never been a fan of any chairman of the Federal Reserve. I'm not picking on her. And she, at a conference in Hong Kong this week, was asked about this and what her response was to the bond market and the inversion of the yield curve. They said whether that will signal a looming downturn. And her answer was, my own answer is no. I don't see it as a signal of recession. She doesn't see a recession as particularly likely, but what she does see is a cut in short-term interest rates. So in other words, this is telling us not that we're entering a recession. This is telling us that with long-term rates so low, the Fed has to come in and cut short-term rates in order to appease investors who believe that's the way it should be. So what we're actually seeing is a fairly dramatic but not all that unusual flattening of the yield curve, not an inversion of the yield curve, and it's going to signal that you are, if you think you're seeing great interest rates right now, A, you're right, but two, they're probably going to get a little bit better before they get a little worse. So remember in all this hype you're hearing about the yield curve that it is not a cause of anything. It is a reflection of sentiment. Now, it's possible that the Fed could prod us into a recession, I guess. They would go out and raise rates right now, and people would dislike it so much, even though I still think, and Adam, I think you're still with me on this, I still think rates ought to be higher, not lower. But the market,
I mean,
is...
If we were already there, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
At this point, though, it would be very foolish to raise rates. I can't make a case for that right now.
Yeah, but and it's not so much economics either.
Right. I wish we were closer to 3.5%, 4% right now.
Yeah.
So we had more ammunition for the next downturn, but we're
exactly
not, so there's nothing we can do about it.
So I don't care what you do at the Fed right now. The Fed is going to be the goat in this thing. And what this reminds me of briefly, back in 2009, not terribly long into the first tenure of Barack Obama, there's some pictures that started to crop up all over the internet and such. And it was a picture of George W. Bush, and it said under it, "Miss me yet?" Remember that? Well, this is what I think Janet Yellen ought to be doing. If I were in her position, I'd be circulating pictures all over the internet with a picture of her on it with a caption down below, "Miss me yet?" Because Powell has taken it hard from Trump.
He has, but Trump, anyone who's in that position would have been a scapegoat.
Oh, that's true.
It's not Powell at all. In fact, I think Powell was too light on raising rates, but that's just my opinion.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And we would probably be among the vast minority of people involved in finance. All right, I got some economics lessons for everybody. Lesson one, the media cannot cause a recession. Consumers can. Lesson two, wishing, hoping, and thinking and praying can't cause a recession. Apologies to Dusty Springfield. Lesson three, economics eventually trumps politics and media. And the all-important lesson four, which says, see lesson one. That's my economics lesson. Captain Dave.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up?
I've been listening to Jamaica Radio, obviously, over the week. They are prepared for the end of the world. It's amazing what Jamaican news is saying about this oncoming depression.
Really?
They get their news from CNN, which is not so good. And it's just amazing how fast it went from, oh, tourism is going to go down the tubes and, you know, America's not going to have, you know, it's all going to be terrible. And what are we going to do now?
The mass hysteria that comes from a single news source is legendary. Did you see what happened in New York
Jamaica's
Times?
Jamaica's had one of the best performing stock markets in the world for the last couple of 3 years.
Well, yeah, you've been telling us that over the last few weeks, that things are just extraordinarily good.
Right,
there.
But that doesn't, all of a sudden now the end of the world is coming.
It comes in the middle of just report after report of record travel seasons,
yeah,
record
exactly.
travel days. And I guarantee you, this Thanksgiving, I can almost see the headline now: more travelers expected than ever before.
Yeah.
I mean, it just keeps happening.
Yep.
So
it just doesn't make any sense. But I just thought I'd give you that little insight. You know, they're concerned about the bauxite industry because that's one of Jamaica's major exports is bauxite. But it was just amazing. By Tuesday afternoon, it started. And by, you know, the talk shows I listen to and the news shows I listen to, by the time it was yesterday, the end of the world was coming. There's just no doubt about it.
Reminds me of those guys back in the 60s that used to walk around with the sandwich boards on them in the cities.
Yep.
The end of the world is near. I don't know about anybody else.
It's a darn shame on a serious note that here, at least in this country, we have dissenting voices. We do get, now that we have conservative talk radio and like that over the last 20 years, we do get two opinions if you're willing to go look for them. Jamaica, in third world countries, there's only one opinion.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Did you see what the New York Times is doing, Dave?
It can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, there's no doubt. We could talk our way into a depression if we try.
Well, Carter did it.
Yep. Oh, didn't he? My God. Of course, I can't complain. My father made a lot of money in the Carter years.
Good for
him. Well, he bought and sold treasuries.
Okay, there you go. And that was a really good idea.
Yeah, he had it. When Carter left office, he had a 10-year treasury at about 18%.
Yeah, no kidding. That's true. Hey, Dave, did you see what the Times is doing now, New York Times? They have dropped.
No, I don't
their
read
single.
The rag one.
Well, this was all over the news over the last couple of days. They had an editorial meeting, and they have spent 2 years on the Russia, Russia, Russia thing. Well, that's dead now. Now it's the Trump is a racist thing for the next 2 years.
Right.
So you're going to see a single source news, racist, 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 for the next 2 years.
Well,
trying to get him out of there.
Well, that's white guys are all nationalist, socialist, racist, yeah. Whatever the hell we are. I don't know.
Absolutely.
When I shake it out, I say, come down to my house in Jamaica and take a look at my family.
Yeah, there you go. What can you say?
All right, guys, you have a great weekend.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right, a couple more. What's that, Adam?
The only thing I disagree with on Dave is the dissenting opinions. Dissenting opinions are great. It's when you have a single source telling you that dissenting opinion is the absolute truth that we have a problem.
That's
now,
true.
I love hearing both sides of the argument,
yeah.
But that's not what's happening right now.
No, it isn't. Meanwhile, earnings season wrapped up, and it was not stellar, but it certainly wasn't bad. Beat rates for earnings, 57.1%, means the low part of average. Revenue beat rates at 57.3%, solid. There's no indicator of a recession in those numbers. So
now guidance was greatly lowered going into the season.
Which means the next beat rates are going to knock the socks off of them.
It should.
Yeah. We'll see. But anyway, here's a little summary of the way I look at the situation right now. The economic data is turning up much more positive. Consumer sentiment is rising. More people than ever before are working. Retail sales, spurred by working people, are rising sharply, and that is 70% of our economy. You know, gas prices are down from a year ago. Mortgage rates are down from a year ago. European economies are strengthening, with a couple exceptions that you've already noted. Money is flowing into the U.S. markets because everybody's afraid of all the other ones. And the bullish sentiment is low and rising slightly, and we love it when the bullish sentiment isn't too high. There are anti-recession indicators all over the place. I cannot yet find a recession indicator that means anything to me. So if you want our opinion,
yield curve flashing.
Pardon?
Outside of the yield curve flashing, that's the one we've seen so far.
But I liked the comment you made a little earlier in the show. You said you're considering this as the time to take a really good look for a buying point, especially internationally, but I would say almost anywhere. So for those of you who have some cash on the sidelines, no matter where it came from, new or sold out of something or other, you want to talk about it, give us a call, 904-222-8255. A reminder that the trivia question is out there. What country experienced the single worst one-day point drop, or percentage drop, I should say, in their stock market in recorded history? Not a very big country, but it was a very big drop. All right, when we get back, I want people who are born in 1950 and 1951 to take note. There's some things happening that might make you smile. All right, don't go anywhere. We will be right back after the break. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And we still have our trivia question open from First Coast Alarm. Monday saw a humongous drop in the Argentine stock market. It was the second largest one-day drop in the history of worldwide stock markets. What country has the dubious distinction of having experienced the biggest one-day drop? Just the country. I'll tell you how big if you get the country right. All right, Adam, have you lately heard of anything that passed Congress or through the House of Representatives with more than 400 votes?
Negative.
No. The House never gets together on anything under Pelosi versus Trump. Well, two things have recently passed in the House with over 400 votes. The first one is a 419-6 vote, and you better sit down, Adam, and everybody else better sit down for this one. It was a Democrat-sponsored tax cut.
What?
I am not making this up, although I can see why you might accuse me. Who remembers in Obamacare what the Cadillac tax is? For those of you who don't remember, the Cadillac tax was a 40% excise tax that was imposed on plans that were, quote, too good. They were above the plan that Obamacare thought people needed. And it was imposed at the passage of Obamacare, and then it was delayed. And then it was delayed again, and it was delayed again, and it never to this day has actually been imposed. Well, they took it one step further, and by 419-6, they repealed it. Congress agreed to repeal a tax, and the Democrats sponsored it. Now, why do you suppose that would happen? Who are the people with more Cadillac plans than any other group of people in the country?
I would guess big donors to political parties.
Bigger than that. Even bigger.
I don't know.
Union members.
Oh, really?
See the problem? Union plans, most of them that have been in place for a while, are far better than what average Americans get, and they have fought for decades to get that, and they don't want to give it up. So they don't want to pay 40% either, because that's going to be a direct cost and negotiable in union contract negotiations. So rather than that, it was delayed a year or two at a time, and eventually then repealed. Because, you know, getting up on an election season again, and they've got to do something. So here's another thing that justified Obamacare with the cost side of it, because this was estimated to be an income from it. And that's another thing, including the individual mandate that was also taken down to zero. Those are items that no longer come in on the incoming side of Obamacare, and therefore it extends the cost way, way, way beyond what the original estimates were. This CBO, to their detriment, never gets anything right and overstates everything, understates everything. They are not allowed to do a good job giving them credit for everything. Well, they missed the cost of Obamacare huge. They also missed the number of people who would lose their coverage if it were repealed or cut back, or if they were allowed to not buy it and be penalized for doing so. They missed it by a mere 15 million people. Steny Hoyer, the number two Democrat in the House, summed it up best. I've read some additional material, and it's obviously an overwhelming thought that this will not have the effect of raising money or controlling the cost like we thought it would. So you voted against it. Yeah, well, I told you so. All right, born in 1950, what does that mean? That means you got a birthday coming up pretty soon, and it's going to be a big one. So all of us that were born in 1950 are going to turn 70 next year, and half of us are going to turn 70 and a half next year. Well, 70 and a half is a trigger number for the IRS. If you have an IRA, a 401k, a 403b, et cetera, and you are not currently working for the company, or you own 5% or more of that company, you and your family, then you are going to be required to take required minimum distributions. Well, there are a lot of people out there who really don't want to. We deal with them quite frequently. We have a lot of people in this age group, and a lot of them are doing just fine, thank you, and would rather preserve the money for later. Well, you've heard us talking about a couple of the new things that are going around the halls of Congress now that deal with these things. One of them is called the SECURE Act. Now, we all know that Inside the Beltway is an acronym-happy bunch of grammar gnomes, and I think they made up an acronym, and then they set out to try to figure out how to put words to it. But it's called the Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act, or SECURE. Huh? Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement. Yeah, that's okay. SECURE, okay? That's not really the critical part here. If you were born in 50 or 51, it means that you may be getting some relief, because one of the major provisions of the SECURE Act is that the 70 and a half number would no longer be important in our lives. And by the way, how crazy is it that they had a half year thing anyway? But I digress. So what would happen if the SECURE Act passes, and if they implement it right away, and I'm counting on both of those happening. It did but go through the House. It was at least as big as the vote on the previous one that I was talking about. So the House is overwhelmingly in favor of this. So the first thing that it would do to people born in 50 and 51 is it would take away the requirement for your required minimum distribution until 2022, when we actually turn 72. So there would be none for 2020 and none for 2021. You can do it. There's no penalty. If you want it, you can take as much as you want, just so it's at or above the minimum, but you would not have to. Also, starting January 1, for those of you born in 1950, you are no longer able to contribute to an IRA. Now, if you're still working, you can contribute to your 401k, but IRA people have always been second-class citizens in the eyes of Congress. We can contribute less. We can contribute less time. We get much less benefit than the people who have company plans. Well, this is a problem that's been noted by people like us for a long time, and apparently a little bit by Congress, because also part of the SECURE Act is the elimination of the age requirement. If you are 70 or older and one of you is working and you have enough income, enough earned income, that you can cover the deposits, you will be allowed to make IRA deposits starting, hopefully, in 2020 when it becomes an issue. Now, we have a call. I'm going to try to set this up briefly, and I'll finish this after the break and see what's going on here. Good morning, Paul.
I'd like to take a guess on the trivia question there.
Yes, sir. Shoot.
And if you would please restate the question, please.
Yes. Argentina just suffered the second largest one-day stock market fall in history. What country experienced the worst one-day fall?
Hungary.
A fine guess, but not right.
Okay, I know it had to be an Eastern European country, and here's why I say that. I think it had something to do with George Soros. And there was some country, if you remember, he manipulated their currency, sure, caused it to collapse, he bankrupted this country for his own personal gain, but obviously it was not Hungary.
Well, I love your line of thinking, but I'm going to tell everybody out there right now, this particular incident did not involve George Soros.
Okay.
But I love the way you think, and I appreciate your call. Thank you. All right, you just got a hint, folks. It did not involve George Soros. Now, what that means for the geographic answer to this question, you got to figure out. Anyway, I'm going to talk a lot more about the Secure Act right after the break. It's not perfect. Nothing Congress does will ever be perfect. And you know that Congress giveth and Congress taketh away. Try that a few times on the radio, huh? But anyway, we'll get into it again when we get back. And I am just ecstatic at the possibility of this thing possibly happening in time for me. How good is that? All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And most of you probably know Adam is down in Melbourne being a soccer dad. So it's coming in remotely, and as usual, pretty darn clear. I'm impressed.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, me too. All right, back to the Secure Act. The reason this has become a thing right now, I guess, is despite some of the misinformation that you get, we've been hearing a lot about the declining life expectancies in America. And there is some truth in that because of the opioid crisis. If you factor that out of there, then the rest of us who aren't opioid addicted are actually living longer. And this is reflecting that. We've got a couple callers who want to, I would imagine, take a shot at this thing. So we're going to do what we always do. Larry, good morning.
Quick guess. I won't burn much time. Germany.
Boy, I love that guess for the obvious reasons, but no.
Too obvious, right?
Yeah, perhaps. Okay.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate thanks, it. Larry. Thank you.
And good morning, Cheryl.
Hi, I'm going to guess Venezuela.
Another wonderful guess, but
that
also
was
incorrect. Yep, that was incorrect also, but I love the way you all are thinking out there.
Well, it was close to Argentina. Okay.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, this one, by my own admission, it might be a little more obscure than some. But I think, as usual, the banter about the thing proves that the question is very viable, is that the answers that are coming in are deeply rooted in logic. How about that, folks?
And you have to, it's pretty crazy that we're talking about a over 37% drop in one day in the stock market. I mean, the event that takes place on that day has to be so big that investors feel it will dramatically alter the entire economy of a country to the tune of almost half in this case. So it's pretty nuts that that could happen.
And to put it mildly, it's a piker compared to the real answer here.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah, amazing. All right, anyway, despite the things you hear, the distorted statistical group that takes into account murder and opioids, the basic population is living longer. All this is doing is reflecting the change since these laws were put into effect years and years and years ago, the change in life expectancy. Because let's face it, what was designed to be retirement accounts that last a lifetime have to work an awful lot harder nowadays because that the retirement lifetime has been lengthened by several years for most of us. So, and especially people, if you're about to turn 70, you've passed some of the big hurdles in life, and there's a good chance you're going to be around draining those accounts for a good long time. So anyway, not only is this a good thing because we don't have to take it out, but if you are still working, and it's so common nowadays, myself included, it is so common to have people working past age 70 that as long as either of you, if you're married, are earning the money, you can contribute more money and keep it working for you, too. So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Now, if you were born after 1951, this will apply to you. You just got to wait a little longer to get the benefit. But that's no big deal.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do for the people who are in that 1.5-year transition phase, if they're going to allow them to restore that if they want to. These are the little details that make legislating difficult and make it somewhat harder for a financial planner to keep up with it. But believe me, I'm on this one because nothing gets more personal to me than when they're aiming right at my age group. So anyway, as a company worker, you get all kinds of privileges, including the more and larger contributions. I was kind of hoping they might throw bigger contributions in this, but I'm probably getting a little greedy. But as I mentioned, you feel the same way, I know.
Yeah, we were lucky to get what we got, or might get.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the tax law. We were lucky to get that tax cut. I would have preferred that they make it permanent, things like that. But that's coming. Anyway, as I mentioned earlier, Congress giveth and Congress taketh away. So sure enough, they did. And in the passage of what's through the House now, it's in the Senate chamber. They say they're going to start on it in September. I hope so. You know, there's an old saying that says the Senate is a place where legislation goes to die. I hope that's not the case in this one. But I think Trump would sign it in a New York minute if they get it out of there. It would be a wonderful thing for a lot of people. Anyway, the stretch IRA rules, which mean when you inherit an IRA from a relative now, there you can stretch out the withdrawals on there. You are required to take required minimums no matter what your age, but they're smaller because you can put it out for the rest of your life and drag them out as long as you can. And that is going away. And for the people who don't have that privilege, they currently have a 5-year rule. They're going to merge the two at 10 years. And I'll be right back to finish this up after. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, good morning. I heard the last two. I don't know if this has been offered yet, but I would say Zimbabwe.
Ooh, I love your thinking again. Only it's not right.
Okay.
But I love that. You people are well versed in the geopolitics of the decade or century. I mean, good guess.
It's a great place not to be.
You got that right, and I appreciate it. Thanks. Ooh, that was a good guess. I wouldn't have come up with that, but the second he said it, it hit me as, wow, that was sharp. Good thinking.
Yep, definitely.
Yep. All right, so if we compromise at the 10 years for everybody who inherits an IRA, except a spouse, I should throw this in, the spouse can still take it as his or her own and over the lifetime. They're not taking anything away from spousal inheritors, just so you know. But everybody else, I'm okay with that. And when you think about it, if they're aiming this thing at the IRA owner, they're really not going to care all that much about what happens to it because they're not getting it until you're gone. So I'll give them that little back and forth on it, although I'd like it to be better. But there is another thing that I'm not fond of, although it's going to help pass it. It's being pushed very hard by the annuity industry because the annuity industry has always felt like they have had sort of a second place sitting when it comes to retirement assets and IRAs. So this is partly designed to ease the burden of small employers and individuals to offer retirement annuities to the retiring people. Well, I don't like it because it makes it kind of an automatic to do an annuity, and an annuity is something that should solve a problem. You don't know if you have a problem until you sit down and analyze your situation, and that can be done with a good financial planner. We do it all the time for people. And if there is a need for an annuity, of course you can get one, but you don't have to get it through the employer with the provider of their choice. You can do it yourself. We've got lots of ways to do that. But there are other provisions, too. This is not just that simple. There are some good things here. Make the 401k plan available to part-time employees. Well, that's kind of cool. We want more and more people in there. There are some additional...
That's one of,
What's that?
I love that provision. I love that provision.
Yeah, I thought
you
would.
It should have been around all. I mean, there's no reason that it shouldn't be open to part-time employees right now.
I absolutely agree with you. All right, next one. Tax credits for small employers. Always a good thing if you can encourage people to start up a plan with a tax credit. It works. Increased contribution caps so that people working at a job can take out more of their paycheck on the way. Making pooled plans more available. That means small employers can gang together and start a plan like that. And this one bothers me, but it's not over yet. 529 educational plans were expanded in the original bill, but the House removed it. Pelosi didn't want it, and she took it out. But what that would have done, among other things, was it would have made income from things like that subject to available IRA contributions. So if you got a scholarship, for instance, and had your own money on the side from working, you could make that contribution based on the income you get as a scholarship or a grant. So there's some little things like that that'll change. Now, what it passed 417-3, and now it's in the Senate. And the one thing that I'm hoping, that the Senate says they're working on some provisions to make it better. And the one thing I hope that they'll put on it is they make the individual tax cuts from the 2017 Act permanent, because they're going to expire after 2025 otherwise. Sri Lanka lost 61.7% in 1989 when their civil war broke out. That was a bad one. All right, see you next week. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.